Welcome to Inspiring Voices, the podcast inspired by IBM's executive search and integration team, showcasing diverse and influential leaders and their impact in the world. Welcome back to a new episode of Inspiring Voices. Today, it's my pleasure to introduce Nicolette Freeman. Nicolette is a vice president and senior partner in aerospace and defense, where she's been able to couple her military experience and deliver next-gen strategies that advance the mission of air and space operations. Welcome to Inspiring Voices, Nicolette. It's an honor to speak with you today.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to join you.
Nicolette, you joined IBM in 2021 as a VP and senior partner for North America Cognitive Process Services. Today, you're a VP and senior partner leading next-gen strategies in aerospace and defense. Can you share a little bit about what your role entails and what attracted you to join IBM?
Absolutely. My role really helps our clients reinvent how work gets done. So it's an exciting space. Next-gen strategies give us all a view of what the future holds for us. So in this role, I leverage the power of IBM to truly define the art of the possible for the warfighter. I would say the aerospace and defense team leverages the technologies and digitizations really required to capture new growth markets, to become more resilient, to become more data-driven, and really for us as IBM to become that premier partner of choice. And we call that that virtual enterprise, that North Star. I tell you, as an Air Force veteran, this is a mission near and dear to my heart because it really reinforces the importance of re-optimizing the future of warfare, right? And we have a big role to play in that space. So what attracted me to IBM? You know, three things: people, principles, priorities. You know, I was a keynote speaker at an operational excellence conference, and I met an incredible IBMer. And her presence really just penetrated the entire conference, the whole atmosphere. In my eyes, you know, she could scale tall buildings in a single bound. She exuded excellence. And we really built an enduring relationship just in that singular interaction. Over the years, though, we stayed connected and the opportunity naturally presented itself when she had an opening on her team. And that really directly aligned with my skill sets. So those are the best roles, in my opinion. When an organization has a need to recalibrate, to do things differently, and then your name enters the conversation. So throughout my career, that's been a common theme. You know, great things happen when you're aligned with people of great character and share common principles and priorities. And I'm really proud of the legacy here at IBM, the legacy of being the front runner, to being the first employer for an African-American salesperson to help those with disabilities ahead of the ADA Act. So that, in a nutshell, is what attracted me to IBM.
Love it. Love it. And love that you're a part of IBM. So
Thank you. And you
touch on this, you know, throughout your career. I mean, you've obviously demonstrated, you know, this successful track record of leading highly successful business turnarounds, scaling new businesses and expanding operations globally. What would you say really has been the secret to your success?
The secret, and first of all, thank you. You know, I really appreciate that. There's so many brilliant minds at IBM, but I think for me, the secret is a championship mindset. No matter what setbacks, setups, or scenarios that you encounter throughout the day or while you're in a role, you know, your mindset must continuously reinforce your desired outcomes. I love tennis. A lot of people know that. I'm an avid player. And in the game of tennis, there are three words that measure the performance, preparation, perseverance, and pain of the game. And they simply are game, set, match. So I look at that from a career lens. And throughout my career, no matter what set I may have come up short in, because you will come up short as a leader, there will be times when it's not picture perfect, it's not an ace. And I had to quickly recalibrate and say, okay, that set is down, that quarter is down, but nevertheless, the next shot has to be an ace. You know, I'm trained for this. This ball is coming in at the speed of your weakness, dear competitor. And perhaps there's not the ops tempo of the country club. And perhaps this is not the culture of the organism. Nevertheless, you keep showing up in championship attire until the work is done and the metrics match that winning scorecard. All in all, I would say that there's no singular thing that really defines success except knowing that defeat is not an option. Winning becomes a mindset that simply is inevitable when you refuse to accept defeat.
Yeah, I agree. And, you kind of touched on this earlier. Your career started as in the U.S. Air Force, and it goes without saying, thank you for your service. It's a different world, right? You know, serving in the military. And so I'd love to just kind of understand a little bit more about, you know, your role in active military duty and what inspired you to join.
You know, 9/11, unfortunately, was the beginning of my military career. And that singular cataclysmic event redefined my life as an Air Force officer. You know, my role was simple: support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic. And now that was reality. In a split second, that oath became reality. You know, I spent a great deal of time in Iraq, Kuwait, the Middle East. And as a combat veteran, you know, my primary focus was delivering support to the warfighter and bringing my people home alive. It was my greatest honor and privilege to do that. And I did that in various capacities, initially deploying with engineers and building infrastructure. Essentially, I like to say it was my job to build cities out of sand, right? As a logistician, a contract and acquisition officer. You know, living in a world in combat with constant explosions and air raids, I have a newfound appreciation for peace and tranquility and really just grateful every day to wake up on our soil. Throughout my Air Force career, though, you know, I lived in 17 homes across countless geographies. And the inspiration behind all of this was my father. He is a force to be reckoned with, and he served in the Navy and has served as an inspiration throughout my life in a myriad of capacities.
You know, you touched on, obviously, having part in several combat tours. And again, I know not a lot of us want to go back and relive that, but if you're comfortable sharing, how would you say combat experience prepared you for the corporate world? And if you were to kind of draw a line in the sand, you know, no pun intended, but, you know, what are some transferable skills that you would, you know, essentially have enabled your success in that professional career of yours and also here at IBM?
Well, believe it or not, it comes down to a four-letter word, so just allow me to unpack that. And the word is VUCA, volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. This is a military acronym, and I don't know about you, but in many ways, transitioning to corporate America as a whole can be volatile. It can be uncertain. It certainly is complex and at times ambiguous, right? And learning how to play in those spaces where the rules of engagement aren't as defined as they are in combat can be a difficult task. At war, you know, this was life and death. I look at IBM and say the beauty of a VUCA environment in this atmosphere is that the work that we do can save lives in a different way, especially in the space that I play in, right? And that so many IBMers play in. Delivering with excellence, putting service before yourself, those are common characteristics in the military that I think bode well here at IBM. During combat, I really began to understand how important it is to master self-regulation and emotional intelligence. And believe you me, that is not a characteristic that you want to learn on the battlefield, right? You really don't want to learn that lesson there. However, you know, as I shared earlier, I reported to active duty 3 months before the attacks of September 11th. And as you juggle the responsibilities of newly defined roles in a hostile environment, you can get the air sucked out of you, you know, and I think 9/11 sucked the air out of our nation and we were off to the races. So again, the common themes between combat and corporate America is knowing how important it is to identify with people, right? To really look at people and be able to resonate with them. Simply put, the answer is emotional intelligence. That's a transferable superpower, I believe, of legendary leaders. Without it, you know, leaders are ill-equipped to run their leg of the race, to process the myriad of mental demands of daily life. And we must remember that human beings, people on our teams, encounter over 400 emotional experiences every single day. That doesn't stop in combat. You still have to deliver. And on top of that, you have the lives of others in your hands as commander. And I took that role very seriously.
Love that answer. And thank you for for just sharing that and just your transparency. And, you know, I myself have a brother who served in the U.S. Marine and, you know, or as a U.S. Marine, who also had to endure combat in Iraq and some other areas of the globe. And being a family member, had that, you know, see firsthand what those challenges and adjustments in a person's life and the impact of what that essentially kind of looked like. And so we'd love to just kind of get your perspective of, you know, someone who stepped away from military duty and then kind of going back into the civilian life. What adjustments were, you know, what was that adjustment like for you and what helped you to overcome any challenges that you were faced with?
Sure. First, I want to say I'm grateful for your brother's service and for your support. You know, as leaders, we have to acknowledge the fact that military service is not an individual contribution. It never has been. It never will be. It takes an entire village, right? And you're part of your brother's village, and I appreciate that.
Thank you.
You know, as I shared earlier, the design for my life has undergone considerable evolution, right? And throughout my career, my career journey, the transition is best described as a triathlon. You know, it's filled with endurance, rapid transitions, anticipation, disappointments, and the expectation to still win championships, right? So I want you to just take a minute, visualize how races begin, right? Here's a triathlon. Let's talk about how this all begins. You know, hearts racing, participants energized, crowds cheering, waiting for that opening gunshot, that universal signal that the race has begun. And in an instant, competitors transform that potential energy into kinetic outcomes. And even though races are exhilarating, they're fulfilling, and at times they're draining, they all begin with a quick burst of action and that stamina that's required to compete at peak performance. You know, within each of us, our lives, there are these races that we're running, whether that's in military service or in civilian service or in corporate America, and we must run and win and achieve our goals. But then we also have to realize that there are races that we run alongside others, and great leaders really recognize the difference and know how to set the pace for both. Either you're leading from the front or I'm running you through the finish line or we're running side by side, right? These are the races I think that really foundationally shape who we are and who we become. You know, what 9/11 taught me about transitions is that fatalities are final. There's no big revelation there, but not all finalities are fatal. So the end of your career doesn't have to be a fatal event. And why do I say that? You know, a lot of transitions, military transitions, we lose a lot of veterans during that transition period, right? But, you know, I like to say, you know, if you have the breath of life, all possibilities still exist. Those known and unknown are yours for the taking. So the living proof is that your ambitions and your life designs are all works in progress. You can't get attached to these titles. If you get attached to these titles, then you find your value based on where you sit in an organization. And therein is a fatal flaw, mm-hmm. right? You need to show up every day and really just embrace who you are and the mission that you are to deliver that day. When I transitioned to out of the military, you know, I was just perplexed, and I remember saying to my family, I'm going to need a break. And I did that. You know, I took a year off and really did a lot of introspection. And I became in my family's eyes, you know, superwoman, you know, so I served on some nonprofits. I was on my son's high school board and, you know, and I did simple things. Like I was at every game and, you know, I cooked from scratch every morning and throughout the day. It's a long-winded way of saying I really embraced my new role. I was no longer Commander Freeman and it was Nicolette. It was being called by my first name for the first time in a long time. And I had to be comfortable in that skin, you know, take the boots off, hang the boots up, and just be who I was created to be.
Yeah. Thank you for just sharing that and the transparency and also, you know, to your family, because I know it is something difficult to navigate, and it's amazing to see how you've been able to transition back into that world of just family, of not going by your last name, you know, and expecting the orders, but, you know, kind of driving, you know, doing new things and new challenging things. And so I really appreciate that answer. And I know something that we've talked about is, you know, also just the importance of communities and, you know, we talk about families and everything else, but organizationally, you know, we also have specific communities that we support, that we're part of. How do you help, or, you know, what kind of support have you found within the communities here within IBM? And, you know, whether that's either through a veterans network or other areas that are important to you?
Absolutely. Well, first this goes back to your original question of why IBM, right? And remember I told you it's people, it's principles, it's priorities. One of IBM's, you know, priorities is to ensure that those that served feel connected here. And I was literally just awestruck, is the right word, when I joined IBM and I received in the mail from the Veterans Resource Group a coin. And, you know, as commander, you carry your set of coins, and other leaders across the military, they present you with coins for service or doing something above and beyond. But it was a beautiful gift, because it's, I get it, right? And for IBM, it said, I've been military, right? So I got an I've been military pin. I received the coin. I carry the coin with me. And it really helps connect communities, right? That you can't conjure up. You can't pretend to do that. That is as authentic as it gets. And I think that's a beautiful representation of IBM. I also serve on various initiatives. So the Veterans Group is incredibly active, which I'm really proud of here at IBM. And we support soldiers to sidelines, and it's a organization to ensure that military veterans, again, as they transition, can still serve, coach from the sidelines. Again, you do not need to be on the playing field at all times. Sometimes your roles change and you give up that position to coach the next generation. So I think that that's really important work. Secondly, you know, I'm the chair of of BEAM, you know, Black Executives and Mentors. And it's an incredible responsibility and I'm grateful for the village that I have as well in that capacity. But I want to share with you, I think, what is most important, and that is the work that BEAM does really to integrate with all BRGs. And it goes back to the 1950s when instant cake mix came out, right? And many people don't know this, but it failed. It was terrible. Why? Because you were telling domestic engineers, if you will, that we didn't need their service, right? Like, you don't have to bake this cake from scratch. Here it is in a box, just as good as what you've done all day. Forget about it. Took the pride out of it.
Yeah.
So instant cake mix, your Betty Crocker, didn't become a success until what? Until it was understood what people really need. And they really need to know that they're involved in the process, right? And so in my opinion, that's what we do with BEAM, is we partner with OLA. We partner with so many BRGs and neurodiversity to ensure that as an organization, as Big Blue, that we're one team, one fight. So back to the cake mix. When Betty Crocker introduced the egg, like, oh, by the way, you've got to add your own oil, some water, and an egg, it was an instant success. Why? Because now I'm part of the process. Why? Because now I have ownership. And I think that goes a long way at IBM as well. And no matter what you're doing, you go further together, which is a great African proverb. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You want to go fast, go alone. Go ahead. Be done with it. You know, you want to go far, you know, you go together. And so I think BEAM and Veterans BRG, we insist that you crack the egg. We insist that you combine all the ingredients to come up with this end product that is absolutely delicious.
Yeah. I love my cake. And no, and that's an honestly, that's such a great analogy too. And I did not know that. I would never even thought, you know, kind of putting those two and two together, but yeah, it absolutely makes sense. And just the power of community. And, you know, you talk about not just the veterans community, but also, you know, underrepresented minorities and those communities. I'm actually a part of OLA and the Hispanic Executive Council from a recruiting perspective, but you know, from your end, like I would love to understand, just let's say you run into a veteran, you know, that's on the street, or, you know, just trying to figure out like what's the next step for me. What would you say to someone that, you know, is looking to kind of move into the corporate world, and what sort of advice would you give them?
Absolutely. Well, once again, you know, IBM to the rescue. You know, I have to commend, you know, the federal sector for all the work mm-hmm. that they've done to help veterans. You know, our VA contract in and of itself is legendary. I mean, it mm-hmm. really is. And if you look at the support that we've supplied to veterans, right? And, you know, get results in transition, grit, you know, again, the results of great work from the IBM team really helps veterans transition, right? And so, you know, but as you said, if I met someone on the street, I would remind them that they're not walking alone. They're just transitioning to a broader, better community right now. And the camaraderie does exist in corporate America. It exists at IBM. And that's how you resonate. People join organizations because of people.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the principles, again, that moral fabric that needs to be upheld. So I would reference the work that we've done across the VA administration. And that work is, again, profound and has really helped so many veterans get the support they need, because the VA has totally been streamlined now. And that has impacted lives. Remember earlier, I told you about that life and death. What are the, you know, what's the value marker here? And for IBM to come in and overhaul the VA benefits administration, come on, you know, that has returned more men, women, and people to their families alive, because no longer are you waiting years for an answer. That whole process has been streamlined by IBM. Like, catch a clue here.
Yeah.
What's the translation? Yeah. Translation is you have less suicides and people can breathe. You know, sometimes navigating these systems are suffocating, and IBM cut through that red tape and delivered, you know, a world-class solution. And so that's what I mean, that no matter where you serve in IBM, you should be proud, because mm-hmm. in many ways you are impacting the lives of others.
Yeah. And I mean, I can attest to the fact that, you know, what that system looked like from a VA perspective, with my brother being, having to use the services, and in many ways how archaic it is. But yeah, I'm super proud, even as an IBMer, to just know that they've had a hand in, like you said, streamlining the process. You know, and to kind of shift a little bit in terms of just, you know, from a broader BRG perspective, I know something that, you know, also very important to you, but how do you think, you know, we can help both attract and retain, especially an area that's been challenged in terms of underrepresented minority and talent, people either leaving organizations or trying to just attract that high level of talent that, you know, IBM is always seeking out? What would you advise, especially in that area?
Well, I think it's a two-pronged approach, right? Mm-hmm. And first, it's early action. I look at this end to end, from hire to retire. Okay. And being involved with Girls That Code early is imperative, right? Girls That Code, I think that program is really important. It's almost too late. We do make progress engaging during the college years, but the earlier the better, right? And setting the example and doing that grassroots kind of outreach, right? And then from a college perspective, you know, recently I represented IBM at a Scholars Gala. And that's what we have to continue doing, is investing in historically Black colleges and universities, right? And making sure that the underserved and underprivileged from all backgrounds have access to the same tools that the majority does. That's really important. You know, I look at the statistics and say, quite candidly, we have to be very careful about our follow through and very purposeful, right? I'm not a great golf player. And I tell you why, the follow through. And so I'm working on that, right? So you want that ball to get to the tee. You want to hit this. You've got to be focused with your follow through, right? And that goes a long way for IBM as well. And it's a sad state of affairs. Like, you look at the Hispanic population, you look at the number of executives in the C-suite, it's worse than African-Americans, right? It's terrible. And so are we going to continue to be complacent? We often get into these conversations, so let the data speak for itself. But that goes back to VUCA, when the metrics don't match the outcome or effort. And so that requires action. It doesn't require another discussion about why we can't keep senior minority leaders in position. That doesn't answer the mail. It simply makes you aware of the statistics. Let's do something about those stats. Let's do something about it. It's not that the skill isn't there, right? So we've got to look at culture, because culture plays a big role there. Sometimes things, as we say in a VUCA environment, aren't black and white. They are not black and white. So that requires you to think outside of the box, right? And as one of our great SVPs reminded me at a Black Executive Summit, and I'll never forget his words, water rises to its level. I'll quote you, Seth, there. Water rises to its level. Now, isn't that the truth? So shall we rise? We shall.
Yeah. Yeah, that's very, very profound wisdom, and it's right. And I think, to your point, and like a lot of intentionality. We can always, like you said, look at the data, but if we're not taking that active role in what we do, it's we're never going to move the needle in the right direction, right?
Absolutely.
What would you say are some of your passions outside of work, things that you like to do?
Well, I enjoy writing. That's one of my great passions. And really platforms, I do a lot of outreach work. And so I sit on a board here, and that is to prevent sexual assault. So that's one of my passions. And being a woman in combat and serving the military as an additional duty in that capacity to ensure that there's equal, fair, and respectable treatment for all, that's a big passion of mine. So I do a lot of work in that space. Also, rollerblading. So I'm a bit of an adventurous, I like to jump out of planes, skydiving, rollerblading. And those are some serious passions of mine. So anything that requires some exertion and some outdoor activity is all good for me. And I really enjoy traveling, because when you connect with people from different experiences, different backgrounds, you can find the common thread amongst humankind. And I think the world would be a kinder place if we continue to do that. Just look for that common ground in people, right? Like who would possibly pass by a child who's hungry and not feed them, right? Or, it's that golden rule that still applies. And that's a lot of my passion, because it's easy at times when you're, a type A person and you're really driven and you want to do X, Y, and Z, and you're always focused on, I got to hit this target, I hit this metric, I got to hit this. Well, very true. And you should do well in your life because you're doing good, right? So I try to spend my time in places where I can help, I can use my talents to help. I also look at high schools and do a lot of work there with young adults, writing their college essays. So I spend some time in that space. And once upon a dream, I taught organic chemistry at the Air Force Academy. So unfortunately, there's still those who dial my phone on a Hail Mary right before the exam.
That's awesome. No, I love it. And I mean, the fact that you wear so many hats, I think that's, both professionally and personally, I think that's just awesome, right? And those are amazing qualities to have. But in all of that, right, you mentioned kind of the key word here, time. Like, how do you find that time, like to work-to-life balance? How do you find that time to dedicate yourself in so many different ways and be able to not just take the time for yourself, but also give back either to your family or to the communities that you're part of?
Sure. So I've got a pretty strict process, and it may sound like, oh, you do a lot, you do this, you do that. There's only 24 hours a day. Well, I have a cut line, So on a daily basis and weekly basis, I have a list of things that must get done. These are must-do priorities. And then there are the things that I would prefer that to get done, or things other people add to that list. Well, my friends, that's where the commander in me comes out. You get cut, right? That's the line. And it fell below the threshold, which means that it's not getting addressed today, right? And it's up to me to determine what priority that item may or may not get in the future, right? So we can't do a whole lot of things extraordinarily well. You know, I focus on those moments that matter. And to that end, you know, I think a really funny story I have is, well, it's funny to me, maybe not to the masses, but it's funny to me. And, you know, on one of my tours to Iraq, back to the sand pit, and my daughter was in her class, had her first Holy Communion, and you know, I was deployed. So there wasn't an expectation for me to be there. But when you get deployed for, you know, a year, you have an 18-month tour, you get to come home. There's this two-week window where you get to come home. And I was working for a general at the time. And my father always taught me that you serve the one that put the stars in the sky, not the one that wears it on their lapel, right? So he always reminded me of that, and treat people fairly and equitably at all times. And I said, you know what? This is my fifth tour in, and come hell, come high water, I'm going to be in that pew for my daughter's first Holy Communion. And, you know, there's this fear of the general, and there shouldn't have been. He was just a man himself. So I told him, I said, sir, I have a deal for you. I'm going to need to move up my tour, my mid-tour swap out. I'm going to have to move that up because I have a priority that I need to be present and accounted for. He said, what do you need? Told him what I needed. I said, consider it done, but you're going to have to give me back more time on the back end. So that's fine. And so that's how that priority shifted from you're in the middle of a war zone to I'm in the pew. I'll tell you one thing, no one remembers what in the world was delivered during that week when I was gone. No one in my command remembers that. But my daughter will always remember that was present and accounted for. And those are the things, those are the moments that matter. You show up, you are present, and you're accounted for in the moments that matter in a lifetime. And everything else is below the cut line.
Love it. I think I'm going to have to implement this cut line. So I might need you to write a book on this cut line thing. I love it. I love it. And I guess, you know, just to kind of wrap up here, one of my favorite questions, but, you know, let's say you run into, you know, 21-year-old Nicolette and say, you know, hey, what would you tell Nicolette of 21? Any advice, anything that you would say, hey, make sure this is something you got to look out for. And again, I know you've experienced a lot. You've traveled the world. You've seen a lot. You've been in combat. So would love to just kind of get your perspective on this.
I would say have a short memory. You know, I think in life, I've spent a lot of time, you know, recalibrating things. And I've learned that memories aren't always our friends, right? And then I would also firmly say, remember, be the heroine in your own storyline, right? Like play your part and your part only. I think oftentimes in this world, we look for entry points in someone else's storyline, entry points that may resonate with us. Like, oh, I'm waiting. You know, think about it. When your parents tell you about the story about how you came into their lives and your birth, like that's all, like, look, the whole, like, yeah, I met your mama at place X and I courted her and I bought her flowers and I wrote her stories. And yeah, later for that, when do I come in, right? When do I come in? I think that the important thing is to remember the moments that matter, the sets that you're down, nothing you can do about it. You're looking for game, set, match. You're looking for a clean sweep here, right? So you got to forget about the mistake you made. You got to forget about missing that ball. And you got to serve the ace. The next, you're going to get back up to the line, and you got to make sure that you train for that outcome that you want, right? And so that would be my advice to my younger self. And also just keep the faith. My faith is everything to me. And, you know, I think there's times where I wavered on that cut line, you know, am I going to get this run in or am I going to start my day in meditation, right? So those are the things that are really important. But I'm grateful for who I am today because of what I went through yesterday. And I know one thing, that I may not know what tomorrow holds, but I know God holds all my tomorrows.
That's right. That's right. Amen to that. Thank you for sharing that. And honestly, it's been such a treat. I know we're essentially at time today, but thank you so much for just taking the time out of your busy day and schedule and just, again, being an inspiring voice to those that are either, you know, coming out of the military, you know, looking for an opportunity in the corporate realm. Choose IBM, number one. But yeah, and then just sharing a bit more about your family and just, you know, your journey here. So thank you so much for the time and really, really enjoy the conversation today.
Likewise. Be well.
Thank you for listening to Inspiring Voices. If you're a senior leader who is interested in learning more about our inclusive culture and leadership at IBM, please reach out to us via email at ibmexecsearch@ibm.com. That email again is ibmexecsearch@ibm.com. We can't wait to hear from you.